Hello everyone. This is part of a series on Disney and race. We want you to know that in doing this series, it is not our intention to talk over the voices of Black creators. I am white.
But I am Latino and bring that perspective as a non-white person to this conversation. However, we know that our experiences are different to those of the Black community. We also know that our audience is mostly white. It is to that audience that we speak and hope to educate.
Please do not consider us the authorities on race or the Black experience. However, as allies to the Black community and the Black Lives Matter movement, we could not in good conscience let this time go past without giving what we could to the cause.
Thank you for listening. We hope what we have to offer is entertaining, but moreover, we hope it is educational for those that need it.
And now, our feature presentation.
I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Before we get started with Zootopia, we have to address something from last week.
Yeah, so last week in talking about why we weren't going to be doing Song of the South, we mentioned that, you know, kind of both the framing device and the Br'er Rabbit stories have a lot of racist history, and we kind of all agreed that the only thing that could be saved from that movie as not horrifically racist was the song Zippity Doodah. We were wrong.
Dead wrong.
After recording that, it came to our attention that Zippity Doodah is actually based on a blackface minstrel song that predates the Civil War. We will not say the name of that song because it has a racist slur in the title. You can look it up if you want. But the chorus was something like Zippa Doodin Doodin Zippa Day or something like that. And that's what they were referencing. So even the one kind of fun, lighthearted, you know, song from the movie was already based on an extremely racist song that was used in blackface minstrel shows. With a racist title. So we retract everything we said about that. When you find out new information, you change your opinion, right?
Yep. And so, considering, and it that is kind of a collar tugging moment, considering that song is all over the Disney parks.
Yeah. So what we did not discuss last week in talking about that was that there is a bit of a small petition. It's not very big at the moment, that is asking the Disney parks to reskin basically
Splash Mountain.
Splash Mountain. Thank you. It's been a long day. And take away the Br'er Rabbit theme, take away any reference to Song of the South. And after realizing that there's nothing salvageable from that film, maybe it's something Disney should think about.
I saw a couple of petitions. One was based off of Princess and the Frog, which I can see happening. Another one I saw was for Moana because, you know, sailing on the water. Another one was Pocahontas, you know, just around the river bend. And considering Pocahontas actually does go down a waterfall in a log canoe, that actually might work.
Honestly, any of those three might work. I mean, I could see you going down the final log drop to get away
from the Shadow Man.
From the Shadow Man. I could see it being a glorious, you know, just around the river bend moment in Pocahontas. I mean, there's lots of ways you could redo that.
Or just fluffy animals with no connection to any in the intellectual property.
Yeah, that works too. I mean, honestly, you know, if you've ever been on that ride, if you like a log flume ride with a drop and a splash, you're gonna go on that type of ride kind of no matter what.
Especially on those hot Florida and or California days.
Yeah, it's good for those. But, you know, it's not like most people went on there because it was themed as Song of the South anyway.
Yeah.
In fact, I only recently remembered it was themed around Song of the South.
And I think that was the intention. It's just, oh, here's this, you know, fox and bear that chase this rabbit, and you can go through this story. And most people don't know that it's Song of the South.
Yeah, so maybe it's time to just get rid of the whole thing and be like, you know what, that was a part of our past and we're not particularly proud of it and we're moving on and trying to be better as a corporation.
That would be good. But yeah. So again, we apologize to our listeners and we will try to be better at our research.
But, you know, I hate to say it, but we both made it till our late 30s not knowing that connection.
Yeah.
So I do wonder how much that's known in the general public. And maybe we're just ignorant and everybody knows the origin of it, but I kind of wonder about
pretty
that.
Sure, I'm pretty sure Walt knew.
Well, I know Walt knew, but I mean, people today.
Mm-hmm.
People in the general public today hearing that song, I'm not sure. There are so many songs, especially, you know, I grew up as a choir kid and with singing in choirs all the time. And there's a lot of songs that we sang as kids that as an adult, I've found out, you know, there were verses removed because of that. And also I grew up as a kid in the South. So it's kind of even mm-hmm. a little more interesting, let's say.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of old songs that it's just, it becomes a thing you sing. Like if you go ask a kid today if they can sing Yankee Doodle Dandy, some of them will. If you ask them what it means, they have no idea what the context of that song is, you know, and a lot of them are like that we don't realize that some of these became popular in minstrel shows or originally had very racist lyrics or still have racist lyrics that we just, meanings of words have kind of been forgotten.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe let's move on, Disney. Let's move on to Disney trying to be more aware in recent years.
Let's move on to Zootopia from 2016. Remember 2016?
Not remember, fondly.
Remember when people said that 2016 was the worst year ever? How many celebrities passed away that year? How many bad things happened that year? And so many people were going again saying, oh, you know, it can only get better from here. Oh, boy, how wrong we were. Anyway, but let's talk about this movie, Zootopia, the story of Judy Hopps, a rabbit from a small town who moves to the big city to follow her dream of being a police officer. And I would assume you would connect with Judy on some level since you are also from a small town.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of talked about this before, as I kind of have a personal connection with all of these. I grew up in a small town and really don't want to be in that small town. So, you know, works out better for most Disney characters than it has for me to this point. But, yeah, I mean, there's lots of things that are laudable about Judy as a character.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things that are kind of understandable about Judy as a character. And then there are some things that I don't connect with so much, but maybe we'll get into that a little bit more. Let's talk about the background of this movie a little bit and who's in it.
So let's talk about the cast of this movie, and it is stunt casting up the wazoo. So many people in this movie that are just known names. Example, Jennifer Goodwin, who most people might know from, who played Snow White in Once Upon a Time as Judy Hopps. You got Jason Bateman, Idris Elba, Bonnie Hunt, Tommy Chong, J.K. Simmons, Octavia Spencer, Alan Tudyk. He doesn't die in this one.
Yeah, good for him.
Maurice LaMarche, legendary voice actor.
John DiMaggio, another legendary voice actor we talked about before.
Jenny Slate from Bob's Burgers is in here.
Yeah, this is the one that surprised me, because I always thought she plays Bellwether. And I always thought, like, when I originally watched the movie, I was like, Bellwether's voice sounds so familiar. And it was only during the rewatch that I put it together that she's Tammy from Bob's Burgers, who is, like, Tina's schoolmate and kind of enemy. Mm. So, yeah, and it's pretty much the same voice, so I'm just assuming that's her.
Yeah.
Nate Torrance as Clawhauser. He's been, you know, he's been in and out of a lot of things, not particularly known for voice acting. Shakira, as Gazelle.
You're gonna have a character named Gazelle, and you're not gonna get Adele to play her. Maybe. That was my first thing. Like, her name is Gazelle, and considering that there's a scene where Judy goes through her iPod and there's all these pun names of bands, you would think that Gazelle would be Adele, but you get Shakira.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, because I got Shakira, she was able to do the
motion capture.
I think they did some looking at her dancing and trying to match. I don't know if she specifically did motion capture. But she also recorded the voice of Gazelle for the Spanish language dubs for both Spain and Latin America. Mm-hmm. So she's like the one person they got kind of double duty out of. Where they've done that sometimes before.
The rumor I heard about this one was Shakira specifically requested having a gazelle as her animal because gazelles tend to have wide hindquarters. And if you know Shakira, you know these hips don't lie.
Yeah, that is a pretty famous rumor that she kept requesting redraws to increase the size of the hindquarters of Gazelle. I don't know how true that is, but I have also heard that quite a bit. More power to her if she did, though. This, other than some people who are like, J.K. Simmons, while you might consider him stunt casting, he really does have a background in voice acting. Same with Alan Tudyk. Alan Tudyk has become like just a workhorse of voice acting now. But
you can't make a Disney movie without Alan Tudyk in it right now.
Especially not a computer animated one as well. Any time that they go for computer animation instead of 2D, it seems like Alan Tudyk's gonna be in it.
Wreck-It Ralph, Frozen, Moana.
Yeah. Moana, yeah. This, you know, I'm not hating on the voice cast, but there weren't a lot of, like, you know, everybody they cast kind of played to type. Idris Elba plays an Idris Elba character.
Tommy Chong plays Tommy Chong.
Tommy Chong is just Tommy Chong. J.K. Simmons plays J.K. Simmons. I mean, they're all, you know, it's Bonnie Hunt and Don Lake together again as Judy's parents, you know.
Who actually named Bonnie?
Yeah, well, yeah, Bonnie and Stu. I don't know why Bonnie Hunt got to keep her name and Don Lake did not.
I assume because Bonnie sounds a lot like Bunny.
Maybe. But yeah, so a lot of these were stunt casted, and and Jennifer Goodwin is always the kind of sweet, naive, with a little bit of bite to her. And Jason Bateman even made jokes at the time about how this was just typecasting for him. When people would ask him, like, well, what's your Fox character like? He would be like, I play in everything. He's dry and sarcastic, but he's got a sweetheart. It's kind of his same character from, Arrested Development. It's the same character he's been playing for almost his entire life. So not a lot of interesting choices, I think, to me, as somebody who likes casting and all that. So
So,
let's talk about the kind of development and stuff of this, because this one went through like so many versions.
oh, go ahead.
This was apparently John Lasseter and Byron Howard wanted to do some kind of all animal film. Or Byron Howard kept pitching to John Lasseter, excuse me, I said that wrong. These kind of all animal films. He wanted to do a bounty hunter pug, but in space. So I guess like Boba Fett, but a pug. Okay. And something about a cat who was a mad scientist.
I'm just going through it here. One of them was an adaptation of the Three Musketeers.
Yeah, and it seemed like he was really inspired by Robin Hood. The Disney version of Robin Hood, which we haven't gotten to yet, but we will.
Disney and these furry kinks, I tell you. And this movie in the furry community. We'll go into that. That's a,
Oh,
that, that that's a that's a that's a that's
do not Google this movie with your kids around. I just
There's a web comic that, yeah.
I mean, if that's what you like, more power to you. Yeah, I'm not judging,
No
but
kink shaming here.
but
We love the furries here.
but it just this this one has spawned a lot of that. But then there were as they were talking about Zootopia as a concept, it was for a while a 1960s spy thriller, wanted to be kind of a James Bond thing. Apparently, one of the writers had a family history of people working for the CIA, and he wanted to do like a spy movie, but animals.
You know, not long before we had spy movie with cars.
But eventually, they decided to focus on the city itself, and they took out the 60s setting and made it contemporary. And then they took out the spy thing and made it a police story. But initially, Nick was the main character. And Judy was the sidekick.
If you go by the teaser trailer, not the movie trailer, but the teaser trailer, which they explain what anthropomorphic means, you would get the idea that Nick was the main character, since he's all over that original teaser trailer.
Apparently, and this one came out in 2016, like we said, and up until the end of 2014, this was Nick's story. And if you know how animation works, you know how late in the process that is. And then they decided that it would be a better film if they made everything revolve around Judy. And they changed it for Judy was the cop and Nick was this kind of street
hustler.
Con artist, yeah, hustler, con artist guy and everything. So yeah, there are still some animatic and recorded scenes that were dropped where in an earlier version of the story all predators had to have like a shock collar. And they had like kind of like a bar mitzvah kind of ceremony where it's like, today you are a man, here's your shock collar. And it is, if you've ever seen it, it is, I found it on YouTube once. It is a horrific scene of like this little kid basically being so happy and at a party. And, you know, now I'm going to be an adult because I get my collar. And then you see them put on the collar and then, like, the kid gets hungry or something or too excited, you know, basically acts like an animal, you know. And it starts shocking the kid. And then the kid, like, very slowly starts to realize, like, why he's being shocked and starts, like, crying. And all the adults and older children are standing around, like, really sad because they realize that, like, now the kid understands that the collar is not, like, a wonderful rite of passage and a piece of jewelry meant to mark you as an adult. Like, it's there to protect society from you.
Yeah.
And it is a horrible scene. And this would have been such a different movie if they'd have gone that way. And I'm not sure how I feel about the way they went, as I think you will see as we get further into the plot of this. Yeah. But I do think that knowing that it was an entirely different movie, basically up until the last minute, is going to be important going forward as we talk about this film as a concept.
Well, it's very similar to what they did with Frozen, how it was originally going to follow more of Anna, and they said, well, let's kind of focus more on Elsa, and the movie clicked. But this one, was like you said, they were focusing more on Nick, and it wasn't really working. Okay, let's focus on Judy, and now everything clicks.
Did it, though?
We'll get into that. We'll get into it. Let's actually. Do you want to go actually get into the plot of this, the story of this movie?
Yeah, let's give a quick overview for anybody who may not have seen this one yet. It's still relatively new.
4 years old. Yeah. So yeah, like we said earlier, this is Judy, a bunny from a small town who dreams of being a police officer, moves to the big city. And she finds out that city life isn't the dream that she thought it was. That she's nothing more than a token. It's a token job. You know, she's the first bunny police officer.
She's the token bunny. Yeah.
She's the token bunny. She is the first prey, the first herbivore in an all omnivore police.
Not really. She is the first bunny, because there are some the makeup of the Zootopia Police Department is so weird because they're not entirely predator animals, but there are some animals that while they are predator animals are also not entirely prey animals too. Mm-hmm. Like the chief that is played by Idris Elba is an African buffalo. And African buffalo are deadly. They will take down a human. They will take down a lion. But they are also prey to lions. And they are, you know, they are herbivores. They do graze in grass and stuff. But they're also not to be messed with. You know? It's very different than the, like, domesticated cow. And all. And in fact, they're still consider this, like, a very important kill if you're into big game hunting, which I am not. Some of the other animals that are in there are hippos.
I saw an elephant.
An elephant and stuff. And these are herbivores. They're not predator animals, but they're also not, like, they're not meek prey.
They're large animals.
Can fight back. They are very dangerous if you get near them and stuff. I mean, a bunny will bite you. I mean, if you've ever had a pet rabbit or whatever, they got a vicious bite, but you don't really hear about humans being taken down by, you know, a stampede of bunnies. Whereas hippos killed many humans a year in their native habitat. You get too close to a hippo and you tend to pay for it. So even though it's not a strictly predator-prey divide, the quote-unquote prey animals that are on the police force are all these, like, really huge, imposing herbivores.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's the only bunny on the force, and they kind of, you know, like, they don't really take her very seriously, even though she graduated top of the class at the academy. Which says a lot.
Yeah, there is a great, I mean, I will give it credit for having a really good montage at the beginning of Judy starting out not being able to cut it in this kind of boot camp that she's in. And it very quickly shows her just going like, nope, I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, and she figures out ways to take down animals 400 times her size.
She uses her wits.
Using their own momentum. Yes. Yeah, I mean, she's really smart. But also, she's tenacious.
Stubborn to a fault, almost.
Yeah, she is. Well, yeah, she is stubborn to a fault. And that's kind of her thing at the beginning of the movie. Don't tell me what I can't do.
Yeah.
So yeah. But eventually she does make it onto the force. First bunny officer, like we said.
But they don't, again, they don't treat her seriously. They make her a glorified meter maid.
Not a glorified, she's just a regular old meter maid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's doing traffic. He said, oh, you gotta do 100 tickets in one day, and says, you know what? I'm gonna make 200 tickets, and, you know, I'm gonna do this, that, and the other, and, you know, she's trying to impress the force, who have no interest in her whatsoever. Like, she could do pretty much anything, and they'll, like, said, yeah, whatever, you're still a, as the movie says, dumb bunny.
Yeah.
And that itself, I've heard a lot of people, you know, you want, they say about the racism in this movie, but that's a lot in terms of sexism.
Like, sexism, and a little bit of ableism as well.
Yeah. Like, you're just a girl. A girl can't be, you know, a girl can't be a cop. I mean, we've seen that in many movies.
Yeah, we do have, you know, we do know that there are other female officers on the force. The first thing that that the chief says upon walking in the room is like, well, we have to talk about the elephant in the room. It's her birthday, you know. I mean, so yeah. We know that there's other women on the force, but it's really her size and the stereotypes of her delicate cuteness.
Yeah. Even that is kind of talked about in the movie. Like, a bunny can call another bunny cute, but someone else calling a bunny cute is, and they kind of go like it's a some sort of slur in the rabbit community.
Yeah. There's so much in this movie. I don't even know where to start.
We could start with the very beginning where Judy's parent is pretty much telling her, don't have dreams and you'll never fail.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I kind of relate to that message more than whatever mixed message the rest of the movie is trying to send. This is not one of my favorite movies, and it has not been since it came out.
Yeah, the majority of the reason why we're talking about this movie right now is because this movie has kind of gotten talked about a lot on social media, that people need racism explained to them like they're five, so go watch Zootopia. And it's like, no, this movie doesn't exactly do that in a good way. And we're trying to do this in a way that we don't completely go off the rails with this one.
Yeah, and the other reason that we wanted to do this is, of course, this is a cop film.
Yeah, and the police are not exactly in the greatest light, and that is being kind.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I did my rewatch of this today before recording, and I had to pause my rewatch to watch the press conference from Atlanta where they talked about the formal charges given to two officers who were just involved in the shooting of a black man in Atlanta a few days ago. So I had to stop the cop racism movie to watch real cop racism. And, you know, the horrific weight of that was not lost on me. So, you know, this is a time when we're not only reevaluating messages around race. You know, we talked about Song of the South at the top of the episode, and just today, as we are recording this, and a few days earlier as you listen to this, it has just announced that Aunt Jemima will not be a brand anymore.
Yeah, that came out that it was a based off a blackface character, and now that's not going to be a thing anymore.
Well, the thing is they've known that for a while. And if you're old enough, you remember that Aunt Jemima used to look like the quote-unquote mammy stereotype. She had her hair up in a scarf. She was wearing Civil War era clothing. She was a much larger black woman. And that's rather racist, and maybe you shouldn't do that. So they tried to get around it by being like, oh, you know, she's a more modern-ish woman. You know, she's maybe from the 70s or something, and she's, aunt is not, you know, for those of you outside the South, because I don't really know how widespread this was, but calling older black people who maybe worked for your family, even after slavery ended, you know, if you still were rich enough to have household help that were black, referring to them as aunt or uncle was very, very common. And it was nicer than some things you could call people, but yeah, it still had that connotation.
So like Uncle Ben, or as we talked before, Uncle Remus.
In fact, Uncle Ben went through the same kind of thing, as he used to have a costume that was very much the old South. You know, it was very much Civil War era South in his costuming. And then he got kind of a modern update as well. But you know, they're now going to be changing a lot. It's just come out within the last few hours that they're going to be changing Uncle Ben's as a brand as well. And it looks like they might be reconsidering Mrs. Butterworth's. There are a lot of these brands in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you may not be familiar with them. But inside the U.S., there are a lot of food brands that have this really weird, buy this because it's from the, you know, old black person, and obviously they know food because that's their job. And it's always been kind of cringy, but just recently it's become like a big thing. But, you know, not only are we looking at how we talk about race and media portrayals of race, but we're also talking about media portrayals of the police.
Yeah.
We just had two shows, Cops and like Live PD, I think was the other one, have been canceled. And I'm wondering what the kind of scripted dramas are going to do.
This might be it for shows like Law and Order.
You know, it might be. Or, I mean, they've rebooted Hawaii Five-0 recently. There's a current version of that out. There's, you know, Nathan Fillion's got a show, The Rookie, that's really big right now and a lot of people watch. And there's also, I was even thinking about, you know, I'm waiting for the final season of Lucifer, of all things. And half of that show is a very interesting show about what if the devil tried to be human for a while, and the other half of it is a really cringy cop murder drama. And just owning up to my own bias here, I do not like I do not like cop shows. I have watched some kind of supernatural type shows like Lucifer, where it's like there's a supernatural creature and they solve crime. Angel was a little bit like that, but they were private detectives. One of my favorite shows back in the 90s was about a vampire policeman, and he was a policeman. So, you know, America especially, and I think the UK, because I've watched a few shows out of the UK, you know, Life on Mars and stuff like that. There's a whole genre that is now kind of being known as copaganda, where it's like, hey, the cops are really great. And if they sometimes step outside the lines, they're only doing it for your protection, citizen. I mean, that's the entire basis of Dirty Harry.
Oh, then you have movies like Training Day where, yeah, we have some bad cops, but we also have the good cops that stand up against the bad cops.
Yeah, and while this is a kid's movie and they don't really get into, like, you know, intimidation and stuff as much, I mean, they do take Duke Weaselton
to a mob boss.
To a mob boss to be, like, intimidated. You know?
And of course, Duke Weaselton is a great reference. That's a great reference.
What, one of the better Disney references, playing a pun off of the Duke of Weaselton that Alan Tudyk also played in Frozen.
Not the only Frozen joke in the movie, because Idris Elba does say, let it go.
Yeah, this is not a musical where all your dreams come true. Let it go. Yeah, that... But there are things, you know, where it's like Judy gets into the limo service grounds by being like, oh, look, I saw something suspicious, where she kind of pushed Nick into climbing over the fence.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of suggested that he could go over the fence and she couldn't, and then she used his trespass to then let herself on as a police officer. And that all these things are good because eventually they solve the crime and the real bad guy is brought to justice.
Yeah.
But what is the first thing that happens? They arrest the mayor, who, yeah, as far as we know, did not do a crime.
He was, you know, they explain it. He's trying to protect the people and trying to find the, you know, the reason why all this is happening.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe you could consider it extra legal detention, but it's also like a public health emergency. And right now, you know, we're going through a public health emergency. So,
he even admits what he did was wrong, but he did it under the guise of protecting the people. But
yeah, we are led to believe that he really did have good motives at heart, even if maybe he should have been more forthcoming with the people.
Yeah.
But, you know, this whole thing is, you have Judy start the movie as, I'm going to move to the perfect city and become a cop so I can help people. And then she gets there, and what's the first thing that they have her do is they have her hand out parking tickets. Which, one, anything payable by a fine just means you have to be this rich for it to be legal.
Yeah.
I live not very far from Savannah, Georgia, and Savannah, Georgia has a lot of films that are made in there. So we frequently have big Hollywood stars come to Savannah to film their movies. And some like it so much and are down here so frequently that they have bought houses in surrounding areas and things like that. And on the local news, or sometimes it's kept out of the news, but you hear about it through kind of local grapevines and Facebooks and whatever, of like, this A-list celebrity was caught doing, you know, 150 down a busy street for the 40th time. Because it's like, what is it for a traffic violation? It's just, you pay some money. And when you're that rich, it's like, what reasonable fine can be levied that would make that a deterrent?
Yeah.
So first off, you know, you have the problem with parking fines as a rule, but then, like you said, she's supposed to go out there and get 100 tickets a day.
She has a quota.
Yeah. What if 100 people don't illegally park that day? I mean, granted, it's a huge metropolis, so you would think statistically, but she can't do the entire city herself. Even though she's a bunny and she's shown to do her job very quickly and whatever, she says, I'm going to do 200 before noon. And at that point, you're out looking for crime. You're not responding to crime. You're actively hunting. And you hear people complaining, like, I was over by 3 minutes. I was almost to my car. I was, you know, and if you've ever lived in a city that tickets, you've probably been on the bad side of that if you own a car. So, you know, she starts out wanting to help people, but immediately, because of the way her job is structured, she's hurting people.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like she's in a particularly rich neighborhood. You see, like, you know, tired mothers dragging their kids going like, I was almost there, you know. So what good is she doing in that job? What, you know, she goes through this whole chase in the city with Duke Weaselton when we first meet him, mm-hmm, because he's stolen something, yes. Okay, but she causes so much collateral damage. And what he's stolen is, at first we think that it's just rotten onions, but it turns out to be the bulbs of this flower that's important to the plot. But she doesn't know that when she's chasing him. And she almost gets people, animals, killed.
She almost gets the mob boss's daughter killed.
Yeah, and of course that turns out well for her later. But, you know, we see, like, you know, apartment buildings being knocked over. And fortunately they're righted, but still, you know. If Judy had been a little less...
aggressive?
Well, I was going to say if she had been a little less quick with her reflexes, or if she just didn't care as much about, you know, oh, sorry, you know,
yeah.
Then, you know, at what point does her desire to take down the perp, you know, override everything else?
Yeah.
She harasses Nick originally for what? Melting down a popsicle and reselling it?
And he even says, I have a permit for that. Which, that's the thing, Nick is actually on the level with his business. It's not a... it's a legal business, it's maybe not an ethical business, but it's a legal business.
But
he's buying,
know,
supplies and providing a service.
But, you know, how is that, honestly, any different than a food truck? You buy from a supplier and you resell to various communities you go to. Like, Nick just has a food truck.
Pretty much. He buys a big popsicle, he makes little popsicles out of it, and then he recycles the popsicle sticks to building material. Which, again, he says he has a permit for it. He shows him. He sticks up the permit. I have a permit to do this. I'm recycling. You know, he's not doing anything illegal. Unethical, yes, but not illegal.
You know, I would honestly say that there might be parts of it that are illegal. I mean, we assume he says, I've got a permit for this, and she doesn't really question it. I mean, those permits may be forged. We never know. But I'm not sure it is unethical. He seems to be the only person providing popsicles to the smaller mammals. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like the big elephant store. Mm. But it's like, you know, if there's... I mean, I hate to stand up for capitalism, but if there's a market demand and nobody's filling it, I'm not sure that as long as your product isn't harmful, you know? Mm. So I don't actually see anything he does in that first bit as being all that unethical, except he kind of does con her into paying for...
popsicle.
For the popsicle, but at the same time, she offers to pay for the popsicle.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have to. He's not begging her.
And even, let's rewind that scene a bit. The elephant is refusing service to the fox. Like it or not, it is within his right as a business owner to not serve somebody for any reason. Again, not right, but within his right. But it is within his business rights. And then here comes Judy using her influence as a cop to say, hey, your trunks don't have gloves on it. That's a health code violation. I could write you up for this.
Yeah, she's the one that kind of extorts him. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if that is a health code violation, then, you know, call the health department. That's a public health issue, you know? I'm not down with that. Don't just use it to extort for, like, one person. So we do see Judy, like, from day one, kind of misusing her authority. In small ways. But it's that avalanche effect, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you start out doing the small things and nobody fights back, then the next thing you know, you're dangling weasels over, you know, over a pit of ice in the mob boss's house.
You want to go into the little bit of the racism. She then straight up tells Nick, "Oh, you're very articulate for a fox."
Yeah, which is, there are so many microaggression coded lines in this.
Yeah.
Like, some people are like, well, they weren't trying to make it a racial thing specifically. They were just talking about bigotry. Like, you shouldn't have bigotry against anybody for any reason. But it's like, the language they use is so coded in, you know, well, a bunny can call another bunny cute, but if other people call us cute, then, you know, and telling Nick he's articulate, you don't touch a sheep's wool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big one. There are a lot of other little ones that it's like, no, they are very definitely drawing a racist analogy here. You know, they're trying to talk about racism as a societal issue.
Especially you have Judy, who is raised to believe that predators are bad and that the worst predators are the fox, because her bully, her schoolyard bully, is a fox.
Yeah, and her parents are shown to be very prejudiced against foxes.
Giving her fox repellent.
And a fox taser, and fox spray, and fox... Yeah, there's. Yeah. They try to give her, like, several different fox-specific weapons at the beginning of the movie. Mm. I did want to talk about the... while I did say that it's a good montage at the beginning, showing Judy kind of overcoming her obstacles... Mm-hmm. Okay, what is the thing her drill instructor keeps saying to her every time she fails?
You're dead.
You're dead. You fall off this thing, you're dead. You don't get, you know, this is a big scary criminal, you're dead. Dead, 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 dead.
You fall into the toilet, you're dead.
Yeah, you fall into the toilet, you're dead. That one was funny. But, this kind of reeks of something in the real world that's called warrior training. That is a thing taught to police in order to say, if you come up against a criminal, either you are going home to your family or he is going home to his, but not both. So you always have to be ready to make that split second life or death decision, or else you don't see your kids again. And the drill is, when I was watching it back today, because I had honestly forgotten about the language used in that part of the movie. Mm-hmm. And today it really got to me, because this is how police in America are trained. Mm-hmm. They are trained that you hesitate, you're dead. You're a little slow, you're dead. You second guess yourself, you're dead. Over and over and over again, that's what is drilled into their heads. If you mess up, you are dead. Everything you do has the potential to end up with you dead. And I'm not saying that policing is not a dangerous job, but you know what's a more dangerous job than policing? Delivering pizzas.
Yeah.
Statistically, a more dangerous job in America leads to more deaths on the job than policing. It's not a joke. So the idea that even in this zootopian world, Judy is being taught that, and I get some of it is environmental hazards. You know, be careful, because if you fall from a height in, you know, this particular biome or whatever, it will kill you, which is fine. But they do also bring in, here's a dangerous criminal. You know, you hesitated, you're dead. And, you know, I think the big problem with the movie is, and with so many movies that try to deal with race as an issue, racism as an issue, is that it tries to treat it as an individual problem.
Yeah.
When it is not. It is a society problem. And so it's not that Judy and her parents are prejudiced against foxes. You know, the problem is that there's a whole kind of system that's set up, including the police, including that we see, you know, the elephant feels free to refuse service on the basis of race / species right in front of a cop.
Yeah.
You know, he's not ashamed of what he's doing. It's just, I refuse to serve you. Sorry, talking about this movie is so painful for me because it's one of those that I really think they were trying to do something good here. I think they wanted to tell kids racism is bad.
But they kind of dropped the ball so many times in this movie. Let's kind of fast forward a bit. Let's get to the main crux of this movie, because otherwise we'll be here all day.
Yeah, no, go ahead, sorry.
So we find out that there's a bunch of missing people, missing animals in Zootopia. And Judy is kind of puts herself on to finding one of them, an otter named Emmett. Muppet reference.
Yeah, Emmett Otterton. Yeah.
And I'm sure he has a nice little jug band.
Yeah.
So Emmett Otterton, he's missing. They try to, Judy's trying to find, this is where we find the limo service. This is a very weird scene involving a nudist camp. Well, that's all we're going to say about that one. She tries to find him and then finds out that there's a bigger picture here. There's a bigger mystery here. A conspiracy. Where predators are starting to go savage, feral, going back to their base instincts. And Judy and Nick eventually find all of the missing people, all the missing animals. And Judy has kind of made the face not only of the case, but of the entire police department because of solving this missing person case. And finding out that the person who's been kidnapping all these people is the mayor.
Yeah, who is a lion.
Yes, a lion. Again, trying to protect his own interests. Again, if the people found out that predators are going savage, their mayor, which is a lion, could go savage at any time. Then he'll lose the faith of the people. So the case is broken, and no one really knows why they're going savage and why they're not reverting back to their normal selves. And this is where Judy's own internal racism comes to light, where she says predators are biologically violent. Which, if you don't know why that's a racial thing, again, look at what's going on right now. Where, in the real world, people are calling the police on black people for just doing nothing. They just happen to be in the
grilling. Selling water.
Jogging.
Walking down the, yeah, jogging.
Going shopping. Painting their house.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the most recent one in Atlanta was falling asleep in a car. Unfortunately, that car was in the drive-thru line of a Wendy's. So I get where that was a problem. But this is the thing where again, I think their heart is in the right place. But there are so many unfortunate white supremacist talking points in this movie. And I do believe they were completely unintentional. I do not think I want to give the creators the benefit of the doubt, because it does seem like most of the, you know, I know both directors were white men. It looks like a lot of the screenwriters were also white and things like that.
It is a movie about racism being written by a bunch of white people. Nothing wrong with that. And I agree with you that they had I believe that they had good intentions with this movie. They just kind of messed up on this one.
Yeah, I don't think that this is some kind of dog whistle thing.
No.
I really don't. If it comes out that, you know, one of these people has some unfortunate ties or something, then absolutely I will retract that statement. But I honestly don't think it is their intention, but they play into so many unfortunate talking points.
Yeah.
Let's get into the big one.
Go ahead.
There are, we've got a predator and prey dynamic here. We've got a group of animals that are carnivorous. Some of them are obligate carnivores, which means they must have meat or they will die. In the real world, okay? And it is said in the world of Zootopia, like, we've evolved and everything, but other than popsicles, you never really see anybody eating anything.
You get, you know, you have the carrots, and Nick eats some blueberries.
And I guess there's that little cake at the mob daughter's wedding.
Yeah.
But you don't really see anybody sit down for, like, a meal.
And I personally think that they tried to ignore that and just try to avoid that entirely. I mean, there are people who've asked the directors, but again, this is directors saying something after the fact. This is not in the movie. So we're not going to talk about what directors said after the fact. We have taken the movie as it is.
Yeah. But even beyond that, even if you're like, okay, they figured it out. The thing is that there are very biological gulfs between, say, a fox and a bunny. Okay, there is a size difference. There is a difference in teeth and claws. There is, you know, all these differences that are innate because of evolution. Now, this is what the people who kind of, the Europeans who created the concept of race as we know it in the modern sense, this was their argument, that you can tell giant evolutionary differences in people based on kind of what their ancestry is and stuff. Now, scientifically, we know that that's not true. There are no real differences in human populations like that. Everything about race is either kind of shallow physical markers, like skin color or eye shape, things like that. Or they are completely cultural. Like the fact that the definition of whiteness keeps getting extended. Go back far enough, Irish people are not considered white, despite the fact that they are as devoid of melanin as any people on the planet.
That person got red hair. He can't be human.
Yeah, I mean, it is that kind of thing, but it's also more of a cultural thing of they're not as civilized as we are. They don't do things in the same way. They have a different language, a lesser language. I've actually written academically on the language bias And how
fear of the other and all that.
Yeah, and how the Irish language was almost wiped out by the English. But, you know, you go back far enough and, you know, it depends on, like, some Eastern Europeans that we would consider white now weren't considered white if you go back far enough. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, there is no real genetic difference between, you know, people born on the Asian continent, people born on the African continent, people that originated from the American continents. You know, there isn't, scientifically. But to have something like the prey worried about our predators going to revert to the point where they literally ate us. Honestly, that's kind of a reasonable fear if you're a rabbit or, you know, some small rodent or something.
And that's kind of where this movie kind of falls off, is that it kind of doesn't know what it wants to be. Is it, are these animals as analogs of for people, or are these just animals?
Yeah. And also, who is the marginalized group?
We find out in the movie that majority of the people in Zootopia are considered prey.
Yeah, which is, it's true to the real world. There are far more prey species than there are predators, or else the food chain would not be able to sustain itself. Mm. But the mayor is a lion. At least half of the police force is predator animals, but even the prey animals, like we said, are kind of scary and a danger to the smaller animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see the things like, I mean, Bellwether's whole thing, spoiler alert, she's the bad guy. But Bellwether's whole thing is that, like, she's been picked on, you know, they have to do this, like, mammal initiative to get more variety into the police department, and that seems like Bellwether's thing, because she's like, us little guys need to stick together and stuff like that. We constantly see Judy deal with microaggressions, but then for most of the movie, it's the predators who, once again, while a statistical minority, seem to have all the power. It's like somebody telling you, like, billionaires are the most, they just suffer all the bigotry, let me tell you. Because it's like, okay, who cares? They still have literally all of the power.
Yeah. And they try to kind of make you feel, I mean, look at Nick's backstory. Like, Nick, you know, he wants to join the Scouts, and all the other Scouts kind of pick on him because he is a predator. They put a muzzle on him.
That is awful. I mean, it's a heartbreaking scene, and like the scene I described before that was taken out when it was more Nick's movie, they kind of added that scene in to replace the one I described earlier with the shock collars as to how the predators are so put upon. It is awful and it's horrible, but at the same time, Judy also has kind of a sad backstory in that sense.
Yeah.
Bully scars her face, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, there are bad people on all sides, which is not how real world bigotry and racism works.
No. Again, you got it with Judy's whole thing. Even after her little speech, she goes, "Oh, Nick, you're not like them. Oh, there's a them." It's like even Judy's own, like you said, I would say her own little internalized racism that she may not think it's a big thing, but it adds up.
Yeah, and the same thing with, you know, with what happens to Judy. You know, it's like, does Clawhauser mean anything Is he attempting to say something bad when he calls her cute? No. Well, but we're just told that, you know, it's just a stereotype thing that he passes on without thinking.
And he does apologize for it.
Whole movie. Oh yeah, I mean he does, you know, try to learn, and I honestly kind of like Clawhauser, despite the fact that half the movie he's just a fat joke, which I hate.
The entire joke that, oh, he's a cheetah, but he's fat, so that means he's not fast.
And he's also a cop who eats donuts and gets one stuck in his neck folds, and yeah, I really hate that bit. But the thing is like, you know, okay, so the idea that different races are somehow one group is more likely to be violent than another, okay? Also, the idea that the minority, even if they have all the power, like the political power and the social power, can somehow still be oppressed is kind of a white supremacist talking point.
Yep.
But also, let's get to the big thing. Like, why are these predators going feral again? Well, it's because there's a drug they're being given.
Yeah, we find out, we said before, Bellwether has been giving this serum to predator animals, forcing them to go savage as a reaction to it, as a way to further marginalize the predators, you know, make the predators look bad, to somehow make, I guess you could say, Bellwether's sort of a prey supremacist.
I would call her a prey supremacist. She wants the prey to run everything, and she wants it to be run by fear. She wants to use fear of the other to divide people. Now, that is a spot-on thing. Bravo for kind of that part of Bellwether's character. But, you know, because that is very true to life of the type of people that, you know, we're seeing now try to grab power for themselves based on fear of the other.
2016! That's when this movie came out!
2016! What a prescient movie. But at the same time, the idea of like, oh look, there's a drug, and if certain people take that drug, it will make them violent criminals.
Oh, I didn't even think about that till right now.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Go look up the history of cocaine versus crack, all the old propaganda surrounding marijuana and making it illegal.
Oh, wow. I forgot all about that part.
It is a little bit undercut by the end of the movie where she finds out a bunny can go savage. You know, it's like, well, the drug also affects prey animals too, so I guess it's not problematic anymore. You know, it's like,
and then it leads to a very awkward Breaking Bad reference.
Oh yeah, there are so many Breaking Bad references in this movie.
Disney movie with a Breaking Bad reference. That's, you didn't expect that.
I did not. But there are all these little things in there where you're like, you know. Also, it's the idea of the prey kind of figuring out a way to rise up and take over things. Like, if we're supposed to see the prey as the marginalized group, there is that other white supremacist line of like, well, one day the minorities are going to rise up and take over everything. Yeah, huh? But when we talk about systemic racism kind of finding its way into everybody's brain, you know, even people with, I think, the best of intentions accidentally end up repeating these harmful talking points in a way.
Yeah. And even if you want to go with stereotypes, a lot of the animal characters are stereotyped to what they are. You know, like the sly fox and the literal weasel. You know, all
most of... even my favorite scene in the movie is the DMV scene. I think that is one of the sloths. It's one of the best scenes, and honestly, for my money, it has possibly the best bit of animation I've ever seen, which is the slow realization on Flash's face as the bad joke lands and he finds it funny. Because it goes from like completely no reaction to like a frame by frame, like his eyes widen, and you can kind of see it hit his brain like, oh, that was funny. And then the rest of his face starts to react. It is one of the most masterful pieces of animation I have ever seen in my life. Bravo to everyone who worked on that scene. It is some of the best comedic pacing as Jude repeating herself faster and faster to try to speed this up. Nick standing in the background just grinning because he knows how much this is driving her crazy. I love every second of this scene. But, you know, sloths are slow. I mean, they are. It's not a stereotype. It's part of their biology. They cannot move any faster than that. When you kind of step back a little bit, like, is this, like, the person who, like, you know, walks behind the person with the walker and goes, like, ugh, why can't you go any faster? I was like, well, obviously, no. If they could go faster, they'd be going faster. They're going slowly because that's what their body is dictating, you know? I don't know. It's at once, like, the funniest scene to me, but at the same time, like, yeah, that is how sloths are. Like, are we going to be mad at them for it? I don't know. I have no answer to that. You know, it's both things at once. And the same thing for, like, you know, there's some things where it's like, well, you know, some animals are bigger than others. And then, you know, there's bits about, like, well, you know, move out of my way and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, but they can't help what size they are. That's just the size difference between their biology, you know? It's like...
Yeah, and I do give the movie credit for going and having each animal be their respective size to the other animals, at least as far as it would make sense in the movie. But again, it keeps it going. It's like, is
Except our... for Bellwether, who is either the world's tiniest sheep or Judy is the world's largest bunny.
Yeah.
Because Bellwether and Judy are roughly the same height. And even a lamb shortly after birth is going to be bigger than an adult rabbit.
Like I said, for the most part.
Yeah. That's really the only time, though, that I kind of noticed it. Everything else seems to appear roughly along the scale that I think it would be in reality, except for Bellwether.
Maybe that also adds to her prey supremacy, that she's so small.
Yeah, I guess. And also just Lionheart is awful to her.
Oh, yeah. Calls her Smellweather.
Yeah, and just... It treats her horribly. I mean, Lionheart is not a great character as far as, like, he's not somebody to look up to.
No.
He's
just as bad, and in a way, you know, he also ends up in jail.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think that, again, I wanted to like this movie more than I do. Because there are parts of it that are really good. I like all the kind of gazelle stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get the celebrity turned activist in Gazelle.
Yeah, and she's like leading the protests and trying to, you know, and the kind of, if you have, you know, I like the, and I'm not sure it fully came across in Princess and the Frog, but I do like the idea of telling kids that it's good to have a dream, but then you've got to work for it. Mm-hmm. And that was a theme in Princess and the Frog. Like, you can't just wish on a star and it'll, you know, randomly appear. You've got to do some effort. And the same thing with Judy. It's like people are saying, like, Judy, you can't do this. And she's like, no, no, no. I will put in the work to achieve my dream. It's difficult for her, but she works for what she wants. And I'm good with that, you know? But at the same time, it's like, I think that this movie mostly, in its final version, wanted to be a meditation on racism. And I think every part of that falls apart.
And there's good parts in it, like especially the reforming of Judy's bully, Gideon Gray.
Yeah, I do like that. The idea that...
The language that he uses is of someone who went to therapy.
Yeah, that is very much psychologist language there, yeah.
Like, he knew that there was a problem, he went and got help, and then, oh, it was just my youthful aggressions getting out, I'm sorry. And he straight up apologizes for being an a-hole to Judy throughout their entire childhood.
Yeah, and eventually, you know, has come to an agreement. We see growth in Judy's parents.
Yeah, they actually start working with a fox.
Fear, and they actually work with him. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how I'd feel if you know, my relatives went into business with any of my childhood bullies, of which there are many.
But if those childhood bullies had actually grew as people and learned and actually straight up saying, we are going to be better people. I'm sorry, Kiki, for being your bully in school. You may not forever forgive them. And we kind of don't see Judy truly forgive him. She said, you know, so, you know, and like, she accepts the apology, but she doesn't really forgive him.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think you necessarily have to absolve for what they did to you. If someone hurts you that badly, you may give them another chance. You may move on from it. You may say, like, I accept your apology, but I still don't want you in my life anymore.
I don't trust you.
Yeah, please go forth and do your own thing with my blessing. But you're always going to kind of, you know, I mean, Judy's always going to have both that psychological and probably physical scar. Mm-hmm. From that bullying. So I like that they show that a lot of people who bully are kind of
just having fun.
I mean, he takes ownership
Most bullies in school will say, oh, we were just having fun. It wasn't anything serious. And to that person, yeah, they'll think it's just having fun. But for the person who is being bullied, that's trauma. That's trauma right there.
Yeah. Interestingly, speaking of psychologically, I read like a rather extensive psychological study once of people. They found people that had been really traumatized by bullying in their childhood, adults that had been really traumatized by bullying, and they found their childhood bullies. And then the psychologist went and interviewed the bullies about why did you bully this person? And almost to a one, they legitimately did not remember being bullies. It was so insignificant to them that most of them did not even remember the huge traumatic events. And when they did, they were like, I remember that, but that wasn't like a big deal. That was Tuesday, you know, not you Tuesday, but you know, the day. Yeah. And it turns out that a lot of people do not actually recognize their role as bullies as children. That it actually does not psychologically embed in them that they were the source of trauma to another kid. Especially if it's not something like, you know, physical beatdowns and stuff, when it's more, you know, psychological things or pranks, quote unquote, or whatever. It seems that a lot of people just forget that and move on and don't actually recognize they were ever bullies. So when you're like, man, I wish my bully would apologize to me, you may not be getting an apology because they may honestly have not remembered that. It was not a significant enough event to the bully to actually be in their long-term memory.
Which says a lot of what they did with Gideon in the film.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that Gideon grew, you know, and I love that part. I love the part that it shows both bullies and people who have been bullied that people can grow and change. There is hope for that. Didn't immediately go like, oh, wow, oh, that's great. Let me come to your pie shop and eat all your pie. You know, I was like, no. She's just like, okay, that's good. I'm going back to my life now.
But it is, Gideon is the one that kind of gets Judy that hint that, you know, what the Night Howlers are, and kind of gets the gears running. It's, you know, if Gideon was not there, and the second half of the movie wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Look, kids, bullies serve their place in society too. But I do think that a lot of it is attempting to do the right thing, but the most common thing I get in response, the two most common things is, one, you're overthinking it. It's not meant to be a one-to-one analogy. You have to take it on its own terms, which maybe, but even so, its internal logic I do not feel holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other one I get is, but you have to think of the target audience. It's for kids. It's for tiny little kids. And that one doesn't sit right with me either entirely, because
that actually goes against the Disney way. Disney was never about talking down to the audience. It's, say what you will, but Disney movies were never supposed to be talking down to their audience. It was always entertainment that a kid can enjoy on a level and an adult can enjoy on a level. So saying this is a dumb kids movie, that's no excuse.
Yeah, and we talk a lot on this show about the fact that kids are more perceptive than you think. Kids understand way more than we as a society are willing to believe they can.
Mm-hmm.
And kids' media today, and certainly by the time Zootopia came out, by the time Zootopia came out, we already had things like Avatar The Last Airbender. You know, Steven Universe was already a thing.
Adventure Time.
Adventure Time. Even My Little Pony is getting into deeper places than this, with bigotry, with bullying, you know, the role of police forces. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a big one in Avatar that kind of comes up now and again. But it also, when you're like, well, think of the little children. I think that even unintentionally, what it ends up meaning is, but think of the little white children. They don't understand horrible things like, because I'll tell you, non-white children understand racism at a very early age.
Oh, it says a lot when Sesame Street can explain racism better than Disney can.
Yeah, and Sesame Street has done that recently. They did a special with CNN, I believe.
Yeah, and they this is not the first time they've handled racism on their own show.
Oh, no. Yeah, Sesame Street has dealt with racism over the years, because, I mean, think of how long it's been on the air.
Where half your where a good number of your characters are monsters, yeah, you're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah, and also, the human characters are very diverse racially, yep. And always have been. But, you know, like I said, it's really the little white children. I hate to say it, that don't understand racism on an internal level.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guarantee you don't really have to have race metaphors for little black kids the same age.
No.
I don't really think you have to have it for Latino kids the same age.
Mm-mm.
I don't really think you have to have it for Asian kids the same age.
Yeah.
For Native kids the same age. I mean, by the point they're the target age for this film, almost every group of children except for white children has already experienced racism directed at them. This not just movie, seen it, not just understands it intellectually, has been targeted by racism.
Mm-hmm. You know, children are handcuffed when all they're doing is acting like children.
Yeah. I mean, and that has happened recently. What was it, like a third grader?
Yeah.
Or something like that that just happened, like a third grade little girl or something. I mean, come on. That's awful. You know, if by third grade, black children are being taught that everything they do will be criminalized, then white children deserve to know what's going on at that same age.
This is not the end of the conversation. This movie should not be, okay, this is what racism is, and that's it. This is what I would consider to be the conversation starter. Parents need to sit down with their kids.
But, you know what really, really bugged me and why I really wanted to do this movie so much for this particular little mini-series we're doing right now?
Go ahead.
They use this movie to train police. This movie is being shown in sensitivity training for police. They used this in the Minneapolis Police Department not long before George Floyd was killed. This is now considered the high standard for explaining racism to cops.
Yeah, ooh.
I mean, if that did not just make your blood run cold, come on. I mean, we've already talked about how even in small ways, Judy abuses her power, and the movie's like, that's fine. You know, so maybe it's not even good to teach you how to be a good cop. And then we talked about all the kind of, you know, unfortunate ways it deals with the idea of race and bigotry. I mean, and this is the gold standard that we're using to teach police? Really? I mean, I'm not sure that even if you take it as this is a kid's movie and is perfectly appropriate and teaches the correct things to kids, let's give it that marker for a moment. Okay, this is a great movie for kids. We're taking that as law right now. I wouldn't want this to be a child's only thing. Like you said, at best, this is a start of a conversation, not the end of one.
Yeah, watch the movie with your kids, but then talk with them. Like, yes, this is fantasy. This is... Let's just get to the end of the movie. They find the cure for the Night Howlers, and racism is over! Everybody's friends again! That's not reality.
Because the thing is that the only thing the drug revealed is that there was already racism there.
Yeah.
Judy's parents did not need this Night Howler drug to be afraid of foxes. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it seems like they were afraid of foxes before Judy had her run-in with Gideon. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like my child was attacked by a fox and now I am wary of foxes, which would almost be understandable. Trauma can do that to a person, okay, mm-hmm. but no, it seems they were already bigots, and they just kept on being bigots until their daughter was like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be bigoted.
Yeah.
So even in this, it's like, just sending Bellwether to prison, mm-hmm. it isn't going to solve what's already there in Zootopia, because
whatever was there. Yeah, and are we even sure that the Rams are even actual cops, the Rams that are helping her out?
Yeah, that was weird. I'm not sure what the Rams were. Like, I'm not sure if they were private security. We see like the mobster has hired polar bears or whatever for private security, so maybe the Rams or Bellwethers, maybe she's such a bigot that she wouldn't hire such a different species, so she goes for like a cheap species enforcer or something. I don't know.
And they also make the drug.
Yeah, they also make that. It very much seems to be a sheep only operation.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do we want to wrap it up now? I think we probably have said most of what we can say about this.
Like I said, this is the conversation starter. This is, you sit down with your kids, tell them about, yes, this is a movie, this is fantasy, but then you have to actually have this conversation with your kids. And I know a lot of people don't want to have this conversation with their kids because they themselves don't want to have the conversation with themselves. Let's be true about that. They don't want to have that conversation with themselves because that means they have to admit something about them isn't perfect. And the worst, there are people who the worst thing in the world is admitting that they're wrong. So to come into this movie, to have that conversation with your kids and, okay, maybe we were wrong about this, that, and the other. You got to have that conversation. You may not want to, but, this movie is a starting point. Have that with your kids. Talk with them about it. And,
like you said, that meme is going around. Like, some of y'all need to sit down and watch Zootopia and have racism explained to you. This movie will not explain racism to you. No. Not in any meaningful way.
It barely skims the surface of it. It's the conversation starter. You need to have this conversation with the kids, whether you want to or not. And I really do still like this movie. I realize that there's problems with this movie. I do want to give them credit for the effort. I know it's weird.
Well, yes. I mean, part of when we were talking about doing this is that we did want to point out when Disney is doing something right. And I think the thing Disney was doing right here was trying to talk about a difficult subject
and have that Disney magic at the same time, because you can't fully go into a racism storyline and still have it be a Disney movie, because you're going to have to go into a direction that Disney doesn't really go into.
If they had wanted to make this a better And I think it could. And I do think that a lot of the problems with this film came from having to complete 180 on the storyline right at the end. Because you can still see where it doesn't quite all mesh together. But here's the thing, you know, free advice for anybody that wants to use, you know, talking animals to deal with racism. And people have done it. There are really good movies, comic books, and everything that deal with race and bigotry using animals that are excellent out there. You know, if they were going to do this and have it be like Judy's movie, maybe there's bigotry between bunnies whose ears stand straight up and bunnies with lop ears. Because they're both bunnies. There's no difference between these bunnies. Mm-hmm. It's just which way do their ears fall. Which yeah. is a much closer parallel for human racism than doing it between species. If you see a rabbit and it has, you know, sticky up ears like Bugs Bunny, mm-hmm. you're going to be like, oh, what a cute rabbit. If, you know, if you see a bunny with lop ears, you're not going to go, that is an entirely different thing from the bunnies with the, like, no. So you kind of see it because bunnies are a thing everybody likes. Except for Anya from Buffy. There's my Buffy the Vampire Slayer reference. Out of nowhere. But yeah, I mean, you know, little kids connect with that because they're some of them have rabbits as pets and some, you know. You could go for the obvious and go for fur color.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, you could, I guess, go for breeds of dogs, but again, you're getting into some weird territory because there is some slight genetic differences that do make certain breeds kind of different, you know? But, you know, if you want to use animals, you gotta be a little smarter about it. And maybe keep it all within the same species. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe have Judy trying to explain to Nick, like, no, you don't understand. They're completely different because they have lop ears. And Nick's going like, no, you're all bunnies. You know, that's ridiculous. You're all bunnies. Why can't you see that?
I think, well, like what you're saying with the fur color, I think the fur color would have been hitting it too far on the head.
Yeah, I mean, I think almost any other, because animals all have variations, like humans have variations. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, does the tail curl or droop? Does the, you know, there's all kinds of little things that are markers of animals, but we wouldn't look at that and go, that's a completely different species. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think that one thing, and we said this with Princess and the Frog, have a more diverse behind the stage team.
Yeah.
I mean,
writers, a diverse director.
Even in the stunt casting of the film, this is a really white cast.
Yeah. I mean, you have Idris Elba, who's black, and you have, you know,
Octavia Spencer, but she's in a very small role as Mrs. Otterton. Shakira, you got Tommy Chong.
Yeah.
There are a few others that are kind of, you know, in the background. Mm-hmm. Tiny Lister. Who was great. We didn't even mention him. He's the Finnick the fox that works with, you know, he's done, you know, he's a wrestler and he's been in a lot of other stuff, you know, Friday and Fifth Element stuff. But you know, so I mean, it's not that it's a completely white cast, of course. You know, there's some Asian people in there, there's some black people in there, there's some Latino people in there, there's, you know, But most of the main characters are voiced completely by white people, and it looks like most of the I don't know about all of the writers, but I know both of the directors and what writers that I could find information about were all white. But there's also like 6 or 7 writers credited for this, so it's possible at least one of them was a person of color. But you know, bring in people, bring in sociologists, yeah. Bring in you're Disney.
You have the money.
Yeah, you have the money to do whatever you want. And if you're going to have that much power, at least try to use some of it for good. I do want to say one thing about the song, because there is one song in this film.
Try Anything by Shakira.
Shakira sings it, and she does a wonderful job of singing it. I like Shakira. Good stuff. It was written by Sia, who has written stuff that I like. And Stargate, which is apparently some kind of writing producing people that I had never heard of, but I dig the name. This song is horrible. I'm sorry. Am I the only one that thinks that this is not a great song?
It's not a very memorable song.
It's not very memorable. Almost none of it rhymes, and it's so on the nose that it is painful.
And it plays twice in the movie.
Yeah, and Shakira sings her heart out with it, and bless her, because I absolutely love Shakira's voice. It's really good, but It's so, you want to talk about having something explained to you like you're 5 years old. Sometimes you're going to fail, but you need to get up and try again. Hear me, kids? Get up and try again. You should try lots of things. You're going to fail at most of them. Get up and try again. Which is, I agree with the sentiment, but also, is this the point of the movie? Usually the big song has something to do with the point of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this ties in with Judy's kind of subplot of trying to achieve her dream to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
But is that really the main point of the movie? Because to me, that was like the B plot.
I don't know. I got nothing. Yeah. I got nothing. So let's move on. Let's ask the question: is there magic in this movie? Yes. But the movie is still problematic.
I think certain scenes are definitely magical. Certain bits of the thing are definitely magical. I love the sloth scene.
Especially at the end when you find out he's a speeder.
Yeah, when you find out that Flash is like drag racing through the middle of town. But I like that scene. I love the animation on this is gorgeous. This may be the most beautiful computer animation in the modern Disney era.
And being a 4-year-old movie, saying it holds up doesn't really make sense because it's a relatively new movie.
Yeah, well, but they also,
the fur animation is great, though.
Oh, the fur. Yeah, I mean, they did so well with the fur and the animal movements. One of my favorite little bits of animation, other than the sloth, which is just, it's brilliant comedy. But at the end of the movie, they talk about how the predators that were affected by the drug have been treated, and they're doing, and you get to see inside the hospital with Emmett Otterton and his wife. Mm-hmm. And he wakes up and he looks at his wife, and his wife, like, skitters into bed and hugs around it, and she moves in exactly the same way as otters do, in the way that she like gets up on the bed and kind of curls around him, and it's like watching nature footage. It is so amazing, the movements of some. And I know that they did, you know, Disney's always done this from Bambi on, you know, where they will extensively and sometimes very up close
Study the movements of animals. Study the
movements of animals with the animators. And it's obvious they did it in this one. And bravo, the animation team, I got nothing against you. You were on your A game. This is gorgeous. The writing team, maybe not so much. But I don't know how much of that was...
corporate mandate?
Well, no, not even corporate mandate, but deciding at the last minute to change the focus.
Yeah.
I mean, when you pull out a side character and go, that's the main character now, get it done before the rest of the movie gets animated. Oof. I feel...
We have a deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for him. But, you know, when I saw this movie in 2016, it was not a favorite of mine. Watching it now, it's even less of a favorite of mine. I'm sorry, but other than a couple of, you know, here and there moments, it's not a good movie for me. It's a beautiful movie, but it's not a good movie. I'm sorry.
There's one more thing I just remembered. Judy is the godmother of the mob boss's daughter, which means now she's in the family.
Yeah, that's weird.
A cop in the mob family.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it hasn't happened before, but maybe not present that as an adorable plot point movie. Yeah.
And the one that kind of got a lot of people, I wouldn't say mad, but it started a lot of fan fiction, is it looked like Nick and Judy were starting a relationship at the end of the movie.
You know you love me. Yeah, I know. Like, okay.
So there's this comic book, the fan comic about Judy. No. That is not family friendly.
No.
Do not search for that comic.
We're not getting into that. So yeah, Zootopia, like I said, it's got funny things in there. It's an entertaining movie for kids and also for adults. You know, you can turn off your brain and kind of watch it a little bit. But if you want to talk to your kids about racism using this movie, maybe talk about how this is sort of problematic. I will say that this is another one of those Disney puts in technically gay representation, but it's easy to not see because of China, which is that Judy lives next door to a gay couple.
I mean,
who are great characters, and honestly, the meme going around about this movie that is not about racism is the bit where Judy says, tomorrow's another day, and through the wall they say, but it could be worse, and somebody just captioned that with 2020 in a nutshell. I wish that Disney would be better about that. They're trying to be better on race relations, but they're kind of leaving the gay community behind.
And they try, but like you said, they're kind of at the whim of China. They really want that Chinese money, so they kind of have to sugarcoat around it, or at least something that can be edited out and not ruin the whole movie.
Yeah, and you know what, Disney? You have all of the money in the world. Take the hit.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. Take the hit. Okay, it won't be your international success, but if it's a good movie, it'll still be a success. So.
Let's. I think we've talked. This ending wrap up has lasted longer than it should have. So let's move on to what we're doing next week. Like we talked about, this is the movie that Kiki wanted to talk about. We're going to do the one that I want to talk about, and that's going to be A Bug's Life, which I honestly, I think is a better representation of the whole racism thing. We'll find out next week when we get there. Moving on, because this is time-sensitive information, and we don't want to plug during this time, but time-sensitive, This is your last week to get in your song nominations for the Logan Awards, the Logan Whitehurst Memorial Award for Excellence in Comedy Music. Both myself and Kiki are judges this year, and we are asking you to submit your favorite five comedy songs from calendar year 2019. LoganAwards.com, hit that nominations. You have to submit five songs for your songs to be counted.
Yeah, and your deadline for that is June the 26th.
Which, as of this episode is going out, is this Friday.
Yeah.
And like we said last week, we definitely will welcome any nominations of any comedians of color. Doesn't matter who they are, what they are. It can be the most famous comedian ever or your buddy who does open night, open mic.
Yeah. Nights. If they released anything publicly in the year 2019, we will consider it and we want to hear it. So let us know what we may have missed. We want more diversity.
Comedy music needs more diversity, period.
Yes.
Yes. So that's all we're going to talk about this week. Come in next week for A Bug's Life, and we will talk to you guys next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.